Welcome, everybody, to tonight's satsang. And I always begin by remembering my guru, Swami Muktananda, who began every talk by saying in Hindi, Sabko bade sammane ke saath prem se hridik swagat. With great respect and love, I welcome you all with all my heart. And he would always say that that's the essence of spirituality, to, with love, welcome another person, welcome yourself. And then he would also say that what we all have to do is to meditate on ourselves. He said, meditate on yourself, honor yourself, worship yourself. God dwells within you as you, which I always thought was very intriguing. Worship the divine within you. And then he also had one other thing he wanted to say, which is, don't be a nuisance to others. So do all those things and you'll go very far in this world. Don't be a nuisance to others. Yeah. I would always say that. He once said about me and Giriji, told somebody else, said, they're very good, they haven't been a nuisance to anyone. So I thought that's faint praise, but then later I appreciated it. So tonight, we're celebrating an anonymous sage. We have a picture? Now on the right is Lord Ram, one of the famous avatars, the hero of the Ramayana. But even avatars, that is incarnations, have to have gurus. They have to learn from a guru. And so the elderly gentleman there is... Who is it?
Vasishtha.
So his guru was Vasishtha, and there's an extraordinary work called the Yoga Vasishtha, which was recommended to me by Haridas Baba before I met Baba, and then again when I met Baba, Baba mentioned it to me. And so when I heard it from both of those beings, I realized there's a lot that I could get from this text, a wonderful text. Another picture of... okay. There's Vasishtha teaching Lord Ram, right? Is that it?
Yep.
Very good. That's a... I didn't know they had color photographs in those days, but... anyway. So, the Yoga Vasishtha, little historical stuff. Scholars date it between the 8th and the 11th century, so a medieval text. To me, it's the philosophy of consciousness. It's a marvelous book about consciousness, and it's supposedly the teaching of Vasishtha to Lord Ram. Now, here's an issue. We don't know who wrote it. So... it's an anonymous yogi. So this is a struggle for me. So I finally decided that it's Vasishtha. There was a Vasishtha, but I'm sure he didn't write this book. But for the sake of... sake of argument, you know. So anyway, I'm going to say that this is Vasishtha's teachings. Whoever he was a great being. But whatever his name was, it might have been Shakespeare. he says...
The same guy that wrote Shakespeare's plays.
The same guys who wrote Shakespeare's plays, but of a different name. Anyway, he says, the teaching of the Yoga Vasishtha is that the mind alone creates bondage and liberation. It's the mind. And it's a philosophy of consciousness. It's non-dual. It says there's one stuff, consciousness, and it's kind of... incorporates both the Vedantic point of view and a Shaivite point of view, because both of those are the philosophy of consciousness. They both say that consciousness is the underlying truth of everything. And then they diverge a little bit, but the Yoga Vasishtha says that too. It was influenced by Shaivism, influenced by Vedanta, and also by Buddhism. So it's got a lot of wonderful influences there. It's famous for its many for want of a better word, psychedelic stories. Because it talks about how a particular person is born, then he becomes reincarnated, and he goes through many phases. They're extraordinary stories. Not tonight, but anything is possible. That time is relative, and the soul evolves through many lifetimes. And it's kind of like all of life is a dream. And we go through many different embodiments of that dream and many different aspects of that dream. And it also stresses self-inquiry. One of the reasons I really like it. It's saying that what appears on the surface is an illusion, and what's the truth deeper? You have to inquire to find what the real truth. And the quote that Baba used to always give is Ya Drishti Sa Srishti. So you all say that, okay? Ya Drishti?
Ya Drishti.
Sa Srishti.
Sa Srishti.
Ya Drishti Sa Srishti. Translated as, the world is as you see it. The world is as you see it. In other words, the world is not objectively anything. It's our attitude that makes the world. And we think everything's objective. We think whatever opinion we have, that's the truth. But somebody else has a completely different opinion. Well, they're idiots. So, but when you go deeper enough, you see that everything is conditioned by the way we look at it. What our state of consciousness is, what our prejudices are, what our attachments are. So Yadrishti Sarshrishti. So when you understand that everything exists in the mind, then you can go beyond outer things and you get past the influence of past actions and you attain the self and you get the great, great peace within. And the main battle that's fought, and you'll hear it today, is the battle between your inner self and your past tendencies. And this is the struggle of yoga, to overcome negative tendencies and let the self shine forth. So here's some little bits from the Yoga Vasishta. By the way, the fellow who did this edition of it, translated, was a dear friend of mine, kind of a mentor of mine, and named Swami Venkatesananda. Wonderful man. He was a great soul. Anyway, at the beginning of the book, Ram is in complete despair. The first 60 pages is his being in terrible despair. It's quite depressing to read, actually. he'd been on a pilgrimage. He's the prince, you know, the heir apparent. And he's been on a pilgrimage around his kingdom, and he sees suffering everywhere. So this is what he says about that. He says, by reflecting on and this is from his observations going around the kingdom. He says, by reflecting on the pitiable fate of living beings, thus fallen into dreadful pit of sorrow, I am filled with grief. So he doesn't have a romantic point of view. He sees that everybody's suffering. very similar, well, I say there's a real strong Buddhist element, because the Buddha was also a prince, and the Buddha was raised to only think positive thoughts, and then suddenly discovered that there was old age, disease, and death, and that their life had many difficulties in it. And that's when he decided to follow the spiritual path, because he wanted a solution to that. So he says, I'm filled with grief, my mind is confused, I shudder, and every step I'm afraid. I've given up everything, but I've not established myself in wisdom. Hence, I'm partly caught and partly freed. It's a very good point of view. This often happens at the beginning of sadhana. We see through some of the externals, the values that we used to have. So we've given them up, and yet we haven't attained the joy of the self. So we're nowhere. You ever have that feeling? Like, I've given up that. I can't get satisfaction from all the things I used to think I could, you know, external things. And yet I haven't established myself in the self, so I'm neither here nor there. It's a very hard time. So that's what he's talking about. I'm like a tree that has been cut but not severed from its root. I wish to restrain my mind but do not have the wisdom to do so. So he sees he has to apply yoga and make his mind positive, but he doesn't know how to do it really. He says, hence, pray tell me, speaking to Vasishtha, what is that condition or state in which one does not experience any grief? How can one who's involved in the world and its activities, as I am, reach the supreme state of peace and bliss? Good questions, no? This is what we want to ask the great yogis. Okay, you say this is possible. How do we do it? How do we do it? What is that attitude that enables one not to be influenced by various kinds of negative experiences? These are key things. All day long, we face many issues. Other people's trips, our own prejudices, our own desires, our own fears, our neuroses, all these things, and they're always bringing us down. It's very hard to hold that space. He says, pray tell me, how do you people who are enlightened live in this world? Talking to Vasishtha, how do you great beings, how do you do it? How can the mind be freed from desire and made to view the world both as one's own self and also as no more valuable than a blade of grass? That's really interesting. How can we have the Vedantic view that the world is nothing and yet see that it's all God too? Who shall we study in order to learn the path of wisdom? How should one live in this world? Holy sir, instruct me in that wisdom which will enable my restless mind to be steady like a mountain. You are an enlightened being. Instruct me so I may never again be sunk in grief. This is called being a really good student. These are the right questions to ask. Oh, master, what is that knowledge that I need? Good, no? Can we all identify with those questions? I think we can. He goes on, Ram. Obviously, this world is full of pain and death. How does it become a source of joy without befuddling one's heart? The mind is obviously full of impurities. How can it be cleansed? And with what cleanser prescribed by what great sage? How should one live here so as not to fall a victim to the twin currents of love and hate? Well, actually, that's probably a translation of attachment and aversion, or raga dvesha. Really interesting polarity that Patanjali talks about in other scriptures. Raga dvesha, attachment and aversion. Many things we're either attached to or we hate. You know, the things we're attached to, we want it. And the things we don't like, we want to get rid of. And because of that, we burn. Because we don't get what we want, we get what we don't want, and so on. So how do we not be a victim of a raga dvesha, of attachment and aversion? What is that secret? What is the secret that counteracts the habit of the mind that is spread out in the form of this universe? Who are those heroes who have freed themselves from delusion? When I went to India, I was looking for someone who freed himself or herself from delusion. And what methods did they adopt to free themselves? If you consider that I'm neither fit nor capable of understanding this, I shall fast until death. So if I can't do it, then I'll just, you know. That's a tradition in India that you fast until death if you get, what is it? If you don't get your way. Having said this, Ram remained silent. So, I mean, he said everything he could possibly do. And now we come a section on those who listen to Ram. We start to get first the sets the scene and then we get the answer. So Valmiki, one of the characters, the writer, Valmiki wrote the Ramayana, but didn't write this. But Valmiki, the character, said, all those who had assembled in the court were highly inspired by the flaming words of Ram's wisdom, which is capable of dispelling the delusion of the mind. Actually, quite depressing words, aren't they? But also inspirational, because they cut through to the essential problem of life. And also express a desire to overcome it in the best way, through inner means. He writes, they felt as if they themselves had been rid of all their doubts and deluded misunderstanding. They drank the nectarian words of Ram with great delight. As they sat in the court listening to Ram's words, it appears as though they were no longer living beings, but painted figures. They were so still with rapt attention. So this happened obviously in the court, and it's a public event, and Ram is saying these things publicly, and they're all just amazed, what's going to happen next? Who listened to Ram's discourse? Sages like Vasishtha and Vishvamitra. Vishvamitra is another yogi, a great yogi, a great hatha yogi. The ministers, members of the royal family, including King Dasarath, that's Ram's father, citizens, holy ones, servants, caged birds, animal pets, the horses of the royal stable, and the celestials. These are like angels. They were clustered around. They said something good's happening over there. Including the perfected sages and heavenly musicians, the Gandharvas, the heavenly musicians. Surely even the king of heaven, Indra that would be, and the chiefs of the netherworld listened to Ram. That'd be, who's the chief of the netherworld?
Yama.
Lord Yama. Thrilled to hear Ram's speech, all of them exclaimed, bravo, bravo, with one voice, and this joyous sound filled the air. To felicitate Ram, there was a shower of flowers from heaven. Everyone assembled in the court cheered him. Surely no one but Ram, who was full of dispassion, could have uttered the words that he gave expression to, not even the preceptor of the gods. We were indeed extremely fortunate to have been able to listen to him. While we listened to him, it seemed as though we were filled with the feeling that there is no happiness, not even in heaven. Is that wonderful? The perfected sages in the assembly said, surely the answers that the holy ones are about to give to the weighty and wise questions of Ram are worthy of being heard by all beings in the universe. O sages, come, come, let us gather in the court of King Dasarath to listen to the answer of the supreme sage Vasishtha. Hearing this, all the sages of the world hastened to the court, where they were duly received, honored, and seated in the court. So that's a big event, right? Kind of like a political convention or something. Not. Vasishtha said, okay, so now we're going to hear Vasishtha's first remarks. He says, O Ram, I shall now impart to you the wisdom which was revealed to me by the divine creator Brahma himself. He says, this is channeled from the divine. O Ram, are you ready? Is this interesting? What's he going to say? What's he going to say? No? He says, O Ram, countless have been the universes that have come into being and that have been dissolved. You like that? You know? So many universes. In fact, even the countless universes that exist at this moment are impossible to conceive of. So that's mind-blowing, isn't it? The many universes going on right now. All this can immediately be realized in one's own heart. For these universes are the creations of the desires that arise in the heart. That desire creates all the universes, like castles built in the air. Neither the world of matter nor the modes of creation are truly real. Yet the living and the dead think and feel they are real. Ignorance of this truth keeps up the appearance. So he's saying we have to go beyond our mundane point of view to a deeper, more profound one, which is quite liberating. It expands our awareness. The mind becomes very expanded. He says, O Ram, even as water remains water, whether there are waves or no waves, whatever be the external appearance of the liberated sage, his wisdom remains unchanged. So he's answering the question about what's a sage like. So whatever it seems like, he's established in that particular place. Wouldn't that be nice to be established in a place of peace and joy? He says, the difference is only in the eyes of the ignorant spectator. Therefore, O Ram, listen to what I'm about to say. This instruction is sure to remove the darkness of ignorance. So the sage has what is called stitta pragna, which is steady wisdom. You know, while we go up and down according to events, disappointments and triumphs, you know, up and down, it's always steady. When you think of Bhagwan Nityananda, you don't think of a guy who's hysterical half the time, freaked out. And he's steady, whatever happens. Now, here we go. You ready for this? This is a very interesting point of view he has. Maybe we won't do that now. No, it's good. Okay? He says, in this world, whatever is gained only by self-effort. Self-effort. Where failure is encountered, it is seen that there's been slackness in the effort. This is obvious, but what is called fate is fictitious, and it is not seen. Self-effort, Ram, is that mental, verbal, and physical action which is in accordance with the instructions of a holy person well-versed in the scriptures. It is only by such effort that Indra became king of heaven, that Brahma became the creator, and that other deities earned their places. So it's in our hands. If we follow the instruction, what does he say? Of a holy person well-versed in the scriptures. If we follow the path properly, as Paramananda was saying, if we follow the upward shift, that effort to follow the upward shift and to fight off the downward shift, that's real effort. He goes on, he says, self-effort is of two categories, that of past births and that of this birth. The latter, that's this birth, effectively counteracts the former. Fate is none other than self-effort of a past incarnation. There is constant conflict between these two in this incarnation, and that which is more powerful triumphs. That is a magnificent statement. I'll say it in another way, okay? It means that there is a struggle between our tendencies, which come from past lives, from youth, from our upbringing, something, things we don't know really, from past lives, our tendency towards anger or fear or whatever it is, and our effort to go towards the upward shift, to go towards peace. So we're always struggling with our tendency to be depressed and miserable, and we have to bring in our yoga to fight it. So it's our past tendency, and we bring in, if we work with our yoga, there's a conflict, and whichever stronger wins. If the tendencies are too strong, we indulge them and we become depressed and miserable and fearful and so on. But if we strengthen our yoga, we overcome them and gradually we attain the self. See what he's saying? Is that clear? Should I say it again 700 different ways? Self-effort, which is not in accord with the scriptures, is motivated by delusion. So it doesn't mean you read the scriptures and you become kind of a dogmatist. It means It means that when you make effort to uplift yourself, that's okay. But when you make effort in the wrong way, you're actually bringing yourself down, and that's a delusion. So to do it in harmony with the teaching of the sages, I used to always ask, what would Baba like? Baba for me was the essence of spirituality and Shakti, and I'd say, what does Baba want? What would he want? And by that, didn't mean what Baba the person wanted, although in his case it was like that, but what the upward shift wanted, what the self wanted, the highest truth wanted. I'd say, what is that, and can I move with that? He says, when there's obstruction in the fruition of self-effort, one should examine it to see if there is such deluded action. And if there is, it should be immediately corrected. Very often in life, we come up against blockages, so we have to examine it. Why is this block happening? Is there some negative tendency I'm following instead of the upward shift? There is no power greater than right action in the present. The yogis say that the only place we can act is now. This is reality. So if we want to work on our minds, we have to think now, uplift our minds now. Whatever we want to do, it has to start now. You can't deal with the past. Past is over. Future's not here. We have to work with it here. Hence, one should take recourse to self-effort, grinding one's teeth, and one should overcome evil by good and fate by present effort. So in practice, what is that? It means if your mind is going negative, you turn away from that. How do you do that? You can say the mantra. Instead of indulging in negative thoughts and in tearing thoughts, self-hatred, or all kinds of self-pity, all these kinds of thoughts, say the mantra. Move towards the self. Move towards the teaching. He says, the lazy man is worse than a donkey. Now, donkeys aren't that bad, are they, really? One should never yield to laziness, but strive to attain liberation, seeing that life is ebbing away every moment. So in every moment, can you make the right choice? Can you make the choice towards the self rather than towards separation and negativity? Every one of us has this, every moment to moment, we face this. And when you're caught by negative emotions, by depression or fear, despair, emptiness, he's saying that you have to make an effort to move back towards peace and joy and self. That's the real effort, in the moment. It doesn't mean doing all kinds of austerities and practices. It means in the moment to move towards the upward shift. You see that? He says, one who says fate is directing me to do this is brainless, and the goddess of fortune abandons him. Hence, by self-effort, acquire wisdom. So he's saying there's no such thing as fate. Fate's only your past tendencies. Valmiki said, at this stage it was time for evening prayers, and the assembly broke up for the day. That's the end of day one. You like that? Huh? Or is it too scary? So the good news is that it puts the free will and effort into your own hands. The bad news is that it puts the responsibility into your hands. You have to do something. And let's see. I think I'll do one more of these and then a little bit of Baba here. So Vasishtha continued. This is the next day, obviously. Self-effort is based on these three: knowledge of scriptures, instructions of the guru, and one's own effort. Fate does not enter here. Hence, he who desires salvation, or happiness, we could say, should divert the impure mind to pure endeavor by persistent effort. This is the very essence of all scriptures. So, my dear ones, what he's saying is fight the negativity of your mind. You can do it. It's just habit. It's just habits, past life habits, doesn't matter. The negativity, get rid of that and move towards the self. You'll be able to find the place in you that's full of upliftment and joy. It exists within everyone. So make that effort, that kind of effort. He says, Ram, talking to Ram, the tendencies brought forward from past incarnations are of two kinds. So now these are the things, because we're born with certain tendencies. You can see in other people. Some people are full of negativity or this or that. Some have sunny disposition. They have tendencies. So we have two kinds. What do you think they are? Two kinds, what? Pure and impure, right? The pure ones lead you towards liberation, and the impure ones invite trouble. Negative tendencies and positive tendencies. You are indeed consciousness itself, not inert physical matter. You're not impelled to action by anything other than yourself. Hence, you are free to strengthen the pure latent tendencies in preference to the impure ones. So nobody makes you depressed or act badly other than you. You know, this is very liberating in a way. Take responsibility and move in the right direction. He says, the holy ones emphasize, persistently tread the path that leads to the eternal good. Moment to moment. He says, the wise seeker knows the fruits of my endeavors will be commensurate with the intensity of my self-effort, and neither fate nor a god can ordain it otherwise. If I try to move towards the upward shift, towards the Shakti, towards the spirit, towards joy, towards peace, towards the divine, I'll achieve it. It's not my fate to go in the other direction. It's just a tendency I have to fight. Indeed, such self-effort alone is responsible for whatever man gets here. When he is sunk in unhappiness, to console him, people suggest it is his fate. This is obvious. One goes abroad and one appeases one's hunger by undertaking a journey and by eating food, not on account of fate. No one has seen such a fate or a god, but everyone has experienced how an action, good or evil, leads to a result, good or evil. So you can't, he's saying, don't complain, it's not your fate, it's your choice. Hence, right from one's childhood, one should endeavor to promote one's true good by a keen, intelligent study of the scriptures, by having the company of the holy ones, and by right self-effort. That's really interesting. It's saying we should teach our children. We should teach our children the right path, adopting it to what a child can understand, to move towards joy rather than towards negativity. He says, fate or divine dispensation is merely a convention which has come to be regarded as truth by being repeatedly declared to be true. If this God or fate is truly the ordainer of everything in the world, of what meaning is any action, even like bathing, speaking, or giving? And whom should one teach at all? No, in this world, except a corpse, everything is active, and such activity yields its appropriate result. It's very radically saying that we have the responsibility for our own state of consciousness, our own lives. You know, we have to learn. If disappointments come up, we have to deal with that properly, which is somehow to let it go, not get so attached. And we have to deal with everything appropriately. People use such expressions as, I am impelled by fate or divine dispensation to do this for self-satisfaction, but this is not true. For example, if an astrologer predicts that a young man will become a great scholar, does that young man become a scholar without study? No. Then why do we believe in divine dispensation? It's very interesting that he's harping on this point. Ram, this sage Vishwamitra is pointing to Vishwamitra, became a Brahma Rishi by self-effort. He's a great yogi, and he did his own, he became noted as a Brahma Rishi, a very high honor. All of us have attained self-knowledge by self-effort alone. Hence, renounce fatalism and apply yourself to self-effort. Do your practice. Meditate regularly, every day. When you find your mind going south, going in the wrong direction, do something to make it go in the right direction. Don't keep going down. I know before I went to India, no one had ever taught me any of this. And I would get caught in like an endless chain of self-pity and hatred of others and criticism and, you know, poor me, all kinds of things. And I didn't, and then as I read Yoga Vasishtha and after I met Baba, I realized that I simply had to get off that. That I was just telling myself the wrong stuff and that going down that line will always be more and more painful. We have to take responsibility and move in a different direction. He says, by self-effort, therefore, restrain the senses and the mind, and with a mind that is one-pointed, calmly listen to what I'm going to say. So it doesn't mean you have to blank the mind. It means whenever the mind goes negative, make effort to make it move positive. And the easiest way is mantra. Mantras are tremendously, you know, what I've often told you about how when my mind went just totally bonkers in India, Baba told me, say the mantra intensely, 24 hours a day. And lo and behold, very quickly, it had changed and I was in a state of joy and bliss again. And to make that effort, and you know, I wanted to think all these negative thoughts. Oh my God, this is gonna... And then he said, just do the mantra. And I just did the mantra, just ignored that, and I got in touch with upliftment. So he says, this narrative deals with liberation. Listening to it with other wise seekers who are assembled here, you will realize that supreme being where there is no sorrow nor destruction. This was revealed to me by the creator Brahma himself in a previous age. This is Vasishtha talking. And so he's about to begin his teaching. I think we've run out of time here. But next week I'm going to continue with Yoga Vasishtha. Can you bear it? Okay. But I thought I'd end with to go into meditation with a question answer from Baba about a related topic. This is a question from during my years in Ganeshapura from Don, who asked, what is the correct attitude towards self-discipline? Now, who is Don? Does any of you remember? I can't remember who Don was. Isn't that silly? I don't know if I can get beyond it. Should I make effort to let it go? Huh? Okay. Baba said, after understanding the nature of one's own self, one should withdraw one's attention from the senses and focus it on the self. In his present condition, a person relies entirely on his senses for happiness, for peace, and for happiness for peace, so much so that he begins to consider his senses his all in all, externals in other words. It is the inner self which should be the supreme object of all of our senses. So he's saying, he doesn't say, not meaning sit and meditate 24 hours a day. He's saying, don't always be aware of your inner space. Always be aware of your inner space. Just as Paramananda was saying, whatever you're doing, be aware of your inner space and see if you're moving in the right direction towards upliftment. And right then and there, not tomorrow, but right now, try to move in the right direction. Grapple with those negative tendencies here and now. This is real effort. He says, it is the inner self which should be the supreme object of our senses. If the eyes want to see anything, let them see the light of the self. If the ears want to hear anything, let them hear the music of the self. If the tongue wishes to speak, let it speak of the inner self. If your hands wish to give or take something, let them give or take from the inner self. This should be your attitude toward self-discipline. True self-discipline implies that you turn all your senses inward and make the self the sole object of all your senses. In other words, keep sadhana, or spirituality, in mind all the time. Always make effort to go towards your core, towards the self, towards the peace within, towards the joy within. Make effort to do that. And when you're not in that, make effort to go back to it. Or as we like to say, bhavana rakho, hold the feeling, go, keep that feeling, move towards that feeling. He says, if you don't do this, you'll never be able to find peace by seeking delight through externals. Find this peace through the self, not through externals. Through the senses, one can never find peace. One can only find misery. As a result of being afflicted with misery, one has to turn to the inner self and seek peace and delight there. Even in ordinary life, you can get rest only by merging the senses in some inner center, either during sleep or during the dream state or during meditation. That's Baba's answer. So even in normal life, we get so much when we rest ourselves. We get sleep or deep sleep or dream, or finally we learn meditation. So the source of happiness and peace is within, and keep that in mind and keep looking for it. This is what Vasishtha is saying. This is what Baba is saying. So let's make a resolution, okay? What resolution should we make? I will take responsibility. I will overcome my negative tendencies. I won't indulge them, okay? Promise? I'll fight against them. What does the guru say? The great beings say that pure joy and pure peace is available to us within us. What it says. No matter how depressed you are, it's just because of the tendencies of your mind. I used to think depression was somehow part and parcel of my life. But it was only the way this inherited thing, the way my mind worked. And so make every effort to move in the other direction. You'll discover that place inside of peace and joy. Okay? So let's meditate. That's a very, very positive message, isn't it? It says the power is in our own hands, that the joy and the thing we seek is already there within us. And the only thing that's separating is certain tendencies we have. Strengthen the movement towards the self. Weaken the tendencies. The more we move towards the self, the more the tendency towards negativity, anger, fear, and sadness weakens. So let's meditate now for 10 minutes. And once again, with great love and respect, I welcome you all with all my heart. Hope I haven't been too much of a nuisance to you tonight. But next week we'll continue with the Yoga Vasishtha, okay? No more about self-effort, some other things will come. So we'll meditate now for 10 minutes. Satgurunath Maharaj Ki Jai.